on to the next agenda item.
Before we do that...
Yes. Which will be item number 13.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Proceed with item 13.
Okay.
Shall I go ahead?
Sure.
Item 13 is the City of Grover Beach Stormwater Management Plan and consideration of approval of their plan and enrollment under the statewide general permit. And seated at our front table is our section manager, Lisa McCann. Seated next to her and assisting is from our stormwater unit, Dominic Rock, and giving our presentation today, and the staff member for this item is Tamara Presser.
Thanks. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. For the record, my name is Tamara Presser, and I'm a water resource control engineer. And item 13 is a recommendation to approve the City of Grover Beach's stormwater management plan and enroll the city under the Phase 2 municipal stormwater permit. In this presentation, I will discuss staff's objective in this item, give you a water quality context of Grover Beach area to give you a better understanding of the local conditions, kind of review the enrollment process, including steps both the city and Water Board staff have taken to reach this point, go over some of the public comments we received on this plan, and give you staff's recommendation. The objective of this item is to approve the September 2008 version of the Grover Beach Stormwater Management Plan, and then also enroll the City of Grover Beach under the Phase 2 Municipal Stormwater Permit, which is also known as the general permit. We find that Grover's stormwater management plan meets the maximum extent practicable, and the suite of best management practices in this stormwater management plan with staff's proposed revisions would be consistent with the 12 other stormwater management plans in Region 3 that have already been improved through this enrollment process. Grover is one of the few municipalities in our region that has existing standards in place that could be effective in controlling hydromodification, and I'll discuss this further in the presentation. Grover Beach is a small coastal city. It's about 2.25 square miles, 13,000 people. They get about 20 inches of rain per year. Water penetrates fairly quickly in Grover's mostly sandy soils. Grover also relies heavily on groundwater for water supply. Over 50% of their water supply is from wells. As you can see looking at this map, Grover is surrounded by three other municipalities. You have Pismo Beach to the north, Aurora Grande to the east, and Oceano, which is under San Luis Obispo County jurisdiction, to the south, and then the Pacific Ocean to the west. And just to point out, Grover City is now called Grover Beach. You have Highway 1 and railroad tracks running north-south through the city, and Grover Beach tends to have flooding problems in this area. There's also a state golf course right here, and then you have the state beach running along the western portion. Meadow Creek is the only water body in Grover Beach. It comes in from the east, travels along the north, and then actually goes back into Pismo Beach through the Pismo Lake Ecological Reserve, and this is home to quite a bit of flora and fauna. And then Meadow Creek runs back into Grover Beach through a channelized section that's naturally with the natural bottom, and then discharges to the Pacific Ocean at the confluence of Aurora Grande Creek, and sorry for the technical difficulty, it says Grande Creek Arroyo. and discharges to the Pacific Ocean in Oceano. Before I go to the next slide, I just want you to get a good visual of how Meadow Creek travels through Grover Beach. What was that? I think it's about right here. Is that? Okay. Does the city want to correct me? Or?
It's close enough.
Okay. All right. This map is actually pulled from the stormwater management plan. And the vectors show magnitude of flow. So as I showed you on the previous map, this is Meadow Creek, and then you have to envision that it then travels down here. This map shows the conventional stormwater conveyance system in Grover Beach. So you have multiple places, urban runoff that has the potential to carry pollutants into Meadow Creek and outfalls at different points. In Grover, they also have a second system for controlling their, managing their stormwater runoff, and that is sending it to publicly and privately owned retention basins scattered throughout the city. And these hatch marks show some of the publicly owned retention basins in the city. The red on this map shows impervious cover. As you can see, Grover is mostly built out except on the fringes of the city. So you're mostly going to be seeing redevelopment as opposed to new development in Grover. By imposing standards on redevelopment, this provides opportunity to improve existing environmental conditions. I'd like to review briefly the enrollment process for getting where we are today. It's been a lengthy process. Grover submitted their first stormwater management plan in 2003, and since then, they've submitted two additional iterations. Staff have provided extensive comments on these draft stormwater management plans in the form of table of revisions. As we've done with other municipalities, we've done our best to involve stakeholders in the enrollment process. Because Grover, along with the other local cities, is fairly small, we took a collective approach to handle the stakeholder meeting process. During the stormwater management plan development process, staff organized a water quality assessment meeting, and the purpose of this was to incorporate input from interested parties, water board staff, and municipalities on existing knowledge about specific pollutants of concern for the representative municipalities, and Grover Beach was invited to this meeting. We also have participated in collective meetings with San Luis Obispo County municipality representatives and the Home Builders Association. We only received public comments on the stormwater management plan from a few interested parties. The San Luis Obispo Coastkeeper submitted many comments. Most of them were along the lines that Grover's stormwater management plan is vague and lacks adequate detail. The Home Builders Association of the Central Coast also submitted a fair number of comments. Most of them were along the lines that staff has unreasonable expectations for applying hydromodification control criteria. The Home Builders Association also submitted some additional information in response to requests from staff for clarification on their comments, and these are included in the supplemental sheet that you should have received last Friday. The City of Grover Beach have submitted a few comments in the form of letters. Most of them are along the lines that the stormwater management plan that they developed exceeds the maximum extent practicable. They also claim that this is an unfunded state mandate. And they claim that staff's expectations for interim hydromodification control criteria are unreasonable. The city also submitted some last-minute additional information covering issues similar to their previous comments. And this, I think, was given to you this morning and includes some responses from staff. We responded to each public comment in detail in the response to comments, and then the last minute comments will also include responses in your agenda package. We've added some proposed revisions based on the public comments. In total, staff has proposed 16 revisions for the stormwater management plan to meet the maximum extent practicable. The resolution includes a complete list of these revisions. In this presentation, I'm only going to discuss primary revisions. A few of the major revisions relate to controlling hydro modification. For a quick review, there are two major components for controlling hydro modification. The first is numeric performance criteria, which typically includes specific standards for regulating runoff flow characteristics. An example of this I've actually pulled from the city's existing standards, and that is the city has established a volume of runoff to retain on site, and it's calculated based on the square footage of impervious cover. The second component in establishing hydro modification control criteria is developing strong applicability criteria, which determines which projects must adhere to the numeric criteria. An example of this from the city's existing standards is if a redevelopment project results in greater than 40% increase in impervious cover, then that project is required to implement their on-site retention standards. So effective hydro modification control criteria is a marriage between the numeric criteria and the applicability criteria. We recognize that there needs to be some level of exemptions or a tiered approach when applying hydro modification control criteria, but those exemptions need to be reasonable. Grover Beach is unique because they have existing on-site retention standards that are already in place. The standards, as they're written on paper, are very progressive. In the grading and drainage plan checklist, which is actually included in the stormwater management plan, one of the appendices, they include their on-site retention standards. However, in the drainage section of the standards and specifications, which you can find on the city's website, they include some exemptions for the on-site retention standards included in this checklist. Staff finds that the current standards meet the numeric portion, but not the applicability portion in necessary for effectively controlling hydro modification. Controlling hydro modification in the city of Grover Beach is important for a few reasons. First of all, to protect water quality. Methods typically used to control hydro modification downstream incorporate low-impact development principles at the site level, and a benefit of using low-impact development principles includes a water quality treatment component. Because Grover Beach is a coastal city, stormwater has the potential of carrying pollutants directly to the ocean, so it's essential to incorporate water treatment at the site level. Some additional benefits for controlling hydro modification in the city is to slow down the flow, so you're going to reduce flooding, which, as I discussed earlier, is an issue in Grover Beach, and then also recharge the city's aquifers. Staff has proposed a few revisions to ensure the city effectively manages hydro modification. This is the first city in our region that we are recommending be allowed to use their existing standards in place of developing new hydro modification control criteria as their interim criteria. However, this is conditional on the city committing to removing the standing exemptions for on-site retention in the drainage section of their standards and specifications. If the city chooses not to modify their existing standards, the city must commit to adopting new hydro modification control criteria. And this approach would be consistent with the approach we've presented to other municipalities throughout this enrollment process. Please see item 6 in the table of required revisions included in the resolution for a more detailed description of these options. Additionally, the city has not committed to developing long-term hydro modification control criteria, so we've proposed a revision that commit the city to doing so. There are a few other primary proposed revisions. First, the city has not committed to start conducting long-term watershed planning until year 5 of their 5-year permit enrollment. We find, because long-term watershed planning is such a huge effort, that this must start in year 1 and be carried out through the entire 5-year enrollment period. Also, long-term watershed planning is a necessary step prior to developing your long-term hydro modification control criteria. Secondly, the general permit requires that cities develop effectiveness assessment strategies At this point, the city has not committed to doing this. So we've proposed a revision that the city commit to measuring effectiveness of individual best management practices and the entire stormwater management program. These are both necessary to ensure that the city continues to have a successful program. With proposed revisions, we find that the stormwater management plan meets the maximum extent practicable. Therefore, we recommend to the board they adopt this resolution that includes staff's recommended changes to approve the city stormwater management plan and enroll the city under the general permit. Although in this presentation I focus primarily on best management practices related to hydro modification control, the city's program includes numerous other best management practices covering other aspects of stormwater management that also play a key role in this program. I'd like to remind you that we've held Grover to a similar level of expectation as the already enrolled municipalities in our region. Improving the way Grover manages their stormwater runoff will be taking one more step towards achieving our goal of healthy functioning watersheds. Questions?
Yes, Tamara, could you move backwards to the slide where you put the numeric criteria?
The examples?
And the applicability standard.
This one or?
That number there, is that what the city is proposing?
No, they've been implementing these standards since 2006. And this doesn't show you a complete set of the standards. I just extracted some examples.
Okay. But I see they have a formula there.
Yes.
That they're using. Has that resulted in any changes, actual on-the-ground changes, in their design of projects?
In specific projects?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want me to give you examples of projects they've discussed with us?
I'm trying to get a feel for how serious an attempt that formula is at controlling, on-site runoff.
When we first looked at their proposed criteria, without talking to the city about specific examples, where they've actually implemented these standards, we found that by capturing, this is actually retaining, not slowly running off this amount of water off the site. By capturing that size or amount of water, you're going to capture those small and medium storms. But we haven't actually talked to the city about how that number has worked for them, but they've given examples of how they've tried to impose these standards on new projects and how they've approached some challenges. And
I haven't seen anything in any documentation that specifically describes the challenges in any detail that they've encountered.
I think in...
Maybe they'll...
For example, the Homeowners Association, in the letter that they submitted, which was in the supplemental sheet you received on Friday, they included some examples of projects that have recently occurred in the city that came across some hurdles when trying to implement these retention standards. So, for example, there's a gas station Chevron project,
Taco Bell,
and then a Habitat for Humanity.
Okay, when you say Friday, was that last Friday or today?
A week ago from today. I'm not sure when you received it.
Okay, all right. Okay. Any other board questions? Yeah, Dr. Hunter.
If you could just briefly characterize for us your response to both the city and the Home Builders Association. They think they were pretty consistent in their views that both the time frame for developing and implementing interim criteria for hydro modification, as well as they both suggest there's an inconsistency between EPA's guidance on smart growth and infill and the HydroMod criteria. Can you just briefly tell us staff's response to that?
Okay, so your first question was kind of give you a summary of our response for these requests for, I think it's a two-year extension for implementing interim hydro modification control criteria.
I think both the city and home builders noted two problems that they have with hydro modification, the interim criteria. One is there wasn't enough time to develop it. 1 year isn't enough time. They suggest 2 years, but they still have a problem with the time frame. And then the second was the idea that introducing interim criteria is inconsistent with EPA guidance on smart growth and infill. And I know you had a very good response, but I thought for our purposes today, it would be important to get that out into our discussion early.
Okay, well, to speak to Grover Beach specifically, they have, like I discussed in this presentation, existing standards in place that we find with minor modifications could suffice as interim criteria. So we think it's a reasonable request to give them a year's time to work on modifying their existing standards. They already have these worked into their development review process, which is one of the major components and time constraints that other cities are going to be challenged over the next year in doing that. So they've already accomplished one major component in getting interim criteria into their review process. So we find that the one-year requirement is appropriate. And then as with regards to the EPA's inconsistencies that the Home Builders Association has brought up, we've read through the specific example of the EPA document. And EPA overall, in most of the resources that we've read from them, show that in some cases it is appropriate to exempt or have some leeway for infill or redevelopment type projects that would align with smart growth principles with regards to hydro modification control criteria. But if you're going to have negative effects or cumulative effects on the watershed, then EPA, and I have specific examples if you'd like to see it, recommends that you still hold those projects to at least some standard for controlling the runoff. And then you also need to remember the water quality treatment component.
Exactly. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. And I think because I think in hearing today, and I think as we go forward, we're going to see the same comments continue to come forward, and I think it's really important to not only respond to them in each case, but let's start to bring that into our dialogue more generally in terms of recognizing this is the broader context in which these stormwater programs are being developed. And let's not continue to have the same points raised and, you know, spinning our wheels, kind of trying to explain that basic component. So I appreciate staff's effort to review EPA guidance and bring that into our kind of our premise just to begin with as we go forward in the stormwater program, and understanding that these concerns shared by industry and also by the municipalities, you know, collectively, I think they're trying to understand the best way to move forward. And I think collectively they are also trying to benefit from each other's efforts to solve these or meet these challenges. So I think in the spirit of this kind of collaborative process that we're engaged in, I just want to be sure we're, you know, recognizing these consistent comments and concerns and bringing them into the framework more generally.
Can I add to that?
Of course.
Just a bit. Dr. Hunter, you were asking about the supposed contradictions with smart growth and the EPA report in particular. And as Tamara Presser pointed, we checked out that report, and here I have a couple of examples here from the report. On page 20, this is the using smart growth techniques as stormwater best management practices. When low-impact techniques and creative landscape design accompany a redevelopment project, the water quality performance at the watershed and site level is enhanced. And in terms of hydro modification, on page 44 of the report, and this is referring to, this is in a section that's talking about urban infill, which is one of the issues that the city has brought up, because that's largely the kind of development that they have. It says some lots may not be critical for natural handling of stormwater, but may be in an area with waterways that are already compromised by development-related storm runoff. And that refers to downstream runoff problems. In this case, There are an increasing number of green building techniques and low-impact development options for on-site stormwater control. Developers and their landscape architects should look at common urban development features such as courtyards, small water features, tree planting areas for stormwater control. Since these features are likely to be already be included in site plans, small design modifications to handle runoff can improve the project's performance. The Center for Watershed Protection has developed several documents under its Smart Sites initiative, which can be found at blah, blah, blah. John Kemmerer is the EPA point person, I guess mostly for Southern California, but anyway, an EPA authority on stormwater. And I asked him about this referral to conflicts with EPA policy. And in my communication with him, he said that contrary to discouraging the use of low-impact development, the document that using smart growth techniques discusses how low-impact development tools which replicate natural processes, for example, green street retrofits, are appropriate in urban high-density settings. And he went on to say that when the issue has been raised with them, that they, EPA, have said that there shouldn't be a choice between smart growth and the use of LID, low-impact development. While the menu of LID tools and options may be less extensive in a densely populated urban setting, LID options still exist and should be implemented where feasible. And I think any time that in any report you can take out different sections, and if they're taken out of context, you can portray a certain meaning that may not be intended. And I think probably the most black and white example of that is in the Home Builders, I think it was the Home Builders Association letter, where they pointed out some language from the report. It was a section that said, here's language that may hinder smart growth, so watch out for it. And one of those was language specifying that post-development hydrology match the pre-development hydrology. And so that was in a table that says, watch out for that. Interestingly enough, on the facing page, there's another table that says language fostering creation of joint smart growth and stormwater policies. And they use the very same phrase, language specifying post-development hydrology match the pre-development hydrology. Their point is that it can be problematic if taken to the extreme. There has to be some flexibility. But to say it, they're just saying it hinders is ignoring half of the message. I just want to amplify on that answer. Okay.
Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. I have some questions for staff, but they may be better answered by city personnel, but I did want to see if you could help me understand. In several cases, you'd mentioned you did not feel the city was committed to some particular changes, and it's always hard to measure commitment. And I was wondering if you had any particular in mind when you say not showing evidence of commitment, or I could give one example of where you used that, if that is helpful.
So your question is, what do we mean by when we say the city's not committed to doing certain
yes.
things? When I referred to commitment, it was they didn't include best management practices in their stormwater management plan to do certain things. So, for example, the city has not committed to developing an effectiveness assessment approach for measuring the effectiveness of their stormwater management plan. So we're saying that they need to add a best management practice to their stormwater management plan that commits them to doing that.
So is there some language you're looking for, or samples from other agencies that you're looking for, or for them to simply state we are going to work on something?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have the agenda package in front of you, but
I
if
do.
You go to the resolution in the table of
do you have a page
revisions.
The resolution is directly behind the blue staff report. And the table is directly behind the resolution.
So it's page 4 of the resolution.
Oh, you're looking at the resolution itself. Or the table starts page 4, right?
And so we're recommending to the board today that they approve the city stormwater management plan with the 16 revisions in this table. And so if we're going to use the effectiveness assessment issue as an example, which number is this? You know what number this? Go to item 10 in the table on page 10. And we've actually included language for the city to put right into their stormwater management plan. So establish a new BMP, best management practice. So in the right-hand column.
So what was missing then, the lack of a BMP was interpreted by staff, and correct me if I'm wrong, as no commitment, that they simply needed to put a BMP in there, and then that would have demonstrated their commitment to do something.
I also was sort of bothered by this use of the word commitment, because it implies that the city is somehow not committed mm-hmm. internally or to the idea, rather than they didn't put something in their plan.
Okay.
I'm wondering if we can't find a better word that doesn't have those other connotations, because it sounds to me like the city is committed to working with us and on a lot of different levels. It's an unfortunate word, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate that clarification. I think that gets to my point, that I think everyone is struggling with this language, and that gets me to another point, and I know it's later agenda item with the LID Center, but there are resources available coming online for communities to help bridge this gap of language. I raised a lot of questions about pre-development versus pre-project and a lot of these terminologies, and it seems to me municipalities are struggling in communicating with other agencies such as the Water Board over some definitions. And I know it took me a half a day to understand the Water Board staff's perspective on some of these terms, and it seems to me that there are new resources coming available. They're not haven't been used yet, such as the Low Impact Design Center. Is that true? There'll be some resources coming online to help with some of these definitions?
Yes, and I guess from staff standpoint, because the LID Center is the separate entity, so they'll be rolling out, services throughout this process. But in the supplemental sheet, in response to, sounds like it was your request for redefining or explaining how we use different hydrologic base definitions.
Yeah, I don't think it was redefining. I just noticed there were several words used in different places that had different connotations.
Yeah.
So I think we now have a clarification of those terms.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And we find that it may be helpful if, at least as the Central Coast Water Board, if we start using some of these terms more uniformly to
yes.
provide more clarification.
I think that will help. And what I've noticed, just as I complimented one of your other staff on taking a policy look at being very cost-effective in some very tough economic times, have you modified your thinking at all with this stormwater management plan or others, given the economic circumstances we're in? There is the issue of an unfunded mandate was raised, but it seems like this agency and cities are much more challenged with funding, and it might be, is that in any way modified your thinking? Because when you first implemented this, there were more funding options. Now there are less funding options. Is that in any way a factor of?
Mm-hmm. You know what, I think I can answer that question.
Thank you.
This program is a program to implement federal law, and the federal law requires that municipal small MS4s meet a standard called maximum extent practicable. And that standard requires implementation of technically and economically feasible management practices that meet six required standards or criteria. It does not allow for a cost-benefit analysis or something like that. It's a maximum extent practicable. It's up to the city to design a program that meets that standard, that they have to have a suite of management practices that address the pollutants of concern in their community, and a cost-benefit analysis, meaning it's cost too much, we're not going to do it,
right,
is not okay. But it's saying, okay, these suite of things will accomplish the same thing as these other things, and they're less costly. That's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
So while you can take into account to some degree that the, you know, and obviously need to, the capability, economic abilities of the municipality, you do that in terms of scheduling and things like that, but not that you can't do those tasks because of economic concerns. And so it is unique because it is implementing a federal law that doesn't allow for the consideration of cost in the same way state laws do. And to deal with the issue of the unfunded mandate, because of that, this is not a state mandate. This is a federal mandate, and the requirement is to meet that federal mandate. And it's a requirement of the cities. It's not that normally a state, that where that comes up is if the state is passing on to another entity its obligation. Meeting the MS4 requirements is not an obligation of the Regional Water Board. It's the obligation of the city to meet the requirements of federal law. So it's not an unfunded state mandate to require them to meet that standard. But MEP, that standard allows quite a bit of flexibility to take into account unique features of a particular community. And I think the staff is trying to say that they've done that in this case by allowing them to look at their...
Thank you for your patience as I'm learning.
No problem. MEP is an unusual standard because it does allow for the flexibility in taking into account the difficulties of managing stormwater in a municipal setting. And for one thing, it doesn't require, like normal NPDES permits, that you have numeric effluent limits that you have to meet at the end of the pipe. It looks at using management practices to meet a certain goal, but it doesn't look at, you know, numeric effluent limits, which is in itself a very much less stringent standard than every other type of NPDES permit.
Well, let me follow up with a yes or no question for you on this to make sure I'm on track. I think the point is trying to get at it, as you'd referenced, it does have an economic feasibility aspect, and is that in any way considered in looking at these, or cost alternatives? And maybe that's just is economic feasibility one aspect of these?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes.
So we might get further discussion on that later,
okay.
Then I'll let that go.
But just it's not a true cost-benefit analysis, because which would say, well, the benefit,
correct,
the cost outweigh the benefit, so we're not going to do it.
Right.
As opposed to, let's look at what can you achieve, you know, for a less costly way.
Right. And that may be a factor of some time with new resources coming on, for example, like the LID Center or something. Thank you.
I think it has to do with choosing one BMP over another.
That's what plays a role
okay.
in choosing BMPs.
Okay. That's helpful.
I've got something I wanted to project that's on this discussion. We're going to have to do it on the Elmo. And it's from the State Water Board website.
And this paragraph right here.
And it's a link to their interpretive materials on Phase 2 permits, and it's a discussion of MEP.
Okay.
And so it has both the State Board's language as to what should be done, and then it has a quote to the Federal Register. So you have both our state agency interpretation and then the EPA's. That's not going to...
Well, thank you. I thought the answer was.
Right, yeah.
A little patience here.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so...
Go down.
It's that middle part there.
Yeah.
This first part, yeah. This is what MEP really involves. There must be a serious attempt to comply, and practical solutions may not be lightly rejected. If from the list of BMPs, a permittee chooses only a few of the least expensive methods, it is likely that MEP has not been met. On the other hand, if a permittee employs all applicable BMPs, except those where it can show that they are not technically feasible in the locality or whose cost would exceed any benefit to the derived, it would have met the standard. MEP requires permittees to choose effective BMPs and to reject applicable BMPs only where other effective BMPs will serve the same purpose. The BMPs would not be technically feasible or the cost would be prohibitive. So that link is to the State Water Board's resolution on this. And then the next part of this is from the Federal Register, which would be the regulations applying to the federal EPA. MEP is the result of the cumulative effect. And notice this description goes to the iterative process that we talk about, making changes over the five-year period with these permits. The cumulative effect of implementing, continuously evaluating, and making corresponding changes to a variety of technically and economically feasible BMPs that ensures the most appropriate controls are implemented in the most effective manner. This process of implementing, evaluating, revising, or adding new BMPs is commonly referred to as the iterative approach. For small MS4s, EPA has stated that pollutant reductions to the MEP will be realized by implementing BMPs through the six minimum measures described in the permit. I think the second part is important for us to just to be aware of, because what the dischargers need to be collecting useful information that they can be doing a self-evaluation of on their own. This is their requirement. So to produce a really good program, they need good data, they need good BMPs, and there really is a responsibility that this be done in a very serious way. So, anyway.
Thank you. Those were both helpful.
Right. Okay. That was my comment on that. That's it for that. There's. Oh, yes, Dr. Hunter.
On a new issue.
Yes.
If I could move on.
And the new issue is?
Public involvement.
Okay.
Public participation and involvement. I didn't see any modifications to that section, and so I thought I'd add a couple comments and also note that the Coastkeeper had provided some extensive comments on both public outreach and public involvement. And this is an area, I think, that is really challenging. We see it in the stormwater programs coming forward. And I recognize that the educational component is essential for a number of reasons. But when you get to the involvement component, there's another dimension to involvement that concerns itself with engaging a diverse set of interests within the community in developing BMPs, in developing the stormwater program as a whole, in recognizing the priorities for implementation, and in reviewing the effectiveness of that process. So to me, the involvement gets beyond the educational component and raising awareness. It's also that important part of developing BMPs that are going to be effectively implemented across different sectors in the community. What I don't see in this plan, and what I think we struggle to see in the plans that have come forward, is how that stakeholder integration occurs with the actual program itself. And so I'm looking at, in the involvement section, there is public participation 2A, 2B, 2C, 2D. I think in that section right there, I was waiting to see one that actually said hold meetings or design a schedule and process for public involvement, diverse stakeholder involvement over the five-year period. And what I see here is a series of efforts to hold meetings to identify who should be involved, hold meetings to identify volunteer participants and opportunities for involvement. But there's no substance there. So I think the plan should spell out what public involvement is going, what is the purpose of public involvement, and also spell out the structure for that over the five-year time period. So if we could put something in that second set of the PP2 section, and we might, I don't know that we could find more specific language in the Coastkeeper comments, but I think he was headed in the same direction. That's my comment.
Okay. Any other board comments or questions, or does staff have a reply to what Dr. Hunter?
Well, if I could add to that, I think, I think the Coastkeeper suggestions were helpful. I think anytime you can be more specific and clear so folks know, okay, now I'm done, this is what I'm supposed to do. It has not been clear, I think, to cities what is expected in this area. So I think your suggestions are well taken. If we could map out what is that best practices, what is been useful in other regions even, I think it'd be very helpful. Thank you.